Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Let's Watch Podcast. I'm your host, James, with my co-host, Carolyn.
Hello.
And today we are talking about my favorite genre of film, musicals. And it's the musical we are talking about is Tick, Tick, Boom, a Netflix film by Lin-Manuel Miranda that Carolyn has the synopsis for.
I do. On the cusp of his 30th birthday, a promising young theater composer navigates love, friendship, and the pressure of life as an artist in New York City. It's written by Stephen Levinson, and it's based on the musical by Jonathan Larson, who is also the titular character.
Yes, and people might the most familiar piece of work by him, if you like me and you're a theater and musical idiot, is Rent. Mm-hmm. And yeah, this is it's a biopic essentially.
But what I found so confusing about this movie is that they advertise it as like the guy who made Rent. And when it's a biopic of the guy who made Rent, you think it's about him making Rent. It is not.
Yes.
It is a movie based on a play that is about this guy writing a play that is not Rent. None of these plays or movies are Rent. Nothing is Rent. This is not about Rent, basically.
No. It's about his it's about how he got his big break, essentially.
But what's funny
is
that
it's an adaptation of his one-man play, Tick, Tick, Boom.
Like, yes, that's what I found confusing, is that, like, it was about his big break, but the play that he is trying to make, Superbia or whatever, it is never actually made. So it's not actually about his big break. His big break was actually Tick, Tick, Boom.
But it was about his play, Tick, Tick, Boom, was about his failures before.
Yes.
So it is like that. So I'm going to get this out of the way in the front so people can understand my opinion on this.
You hate musicals.
I hate musicals.
Yes.
I think it is a terrible way to tell a film story. I think musicals, specifically musicals, a lot of musicals that come to film are adaptations of Broadway musicals. Mm-hmm. And I just think those work better on stage because it breaks, for me, when people start doing like the big singing and dancing numbers with like strangers in, I don't know, maybe a diner.
Mm-hmm.
It breaks the immersion of the film for me. And I myself, when I listen to music, cannot retain what the person who is singing is saying.
Yeah, you're just hearing the tune, not like the lyrics.
I'm a melody listener, so I don't hear lyrics when I'm listening to songs unless I'm like intensely focused on them, and then I'm only focusing on that. That's that's me personally. That's just who I am.
I will say that my theory behind that is that when you're on stage, so have you ever seen Rent? We'll use Rent as an example, but have you ever seen Rent?
I saw the movie and I hated it.
Have you seen the show, the play?
No, I have not seen the play.
So Rent the movie is bad, by the way.
It is. It's really bad.
Rent the play is really good. So Rent the play, the whole thing takes place on a series of various scaffoldings. The scaffolding over here is so-and-so's apartment. The scaffolding over here is, it changes. There's like a little catwalk at the top. So maybe that's a balcony sometimes. And they bring out various furniture. There's chairs and tables and whatever. The whole play takes place in scaffolding. When you are already suspending your disbelief watching a theater show, like, you know, people mime things, you understand what they mean. People walk through some scaffolding, you understood that they walked through a door. When you're already suspending your disbelief with that, it is a lot easier to also suspend your disbelief with songs. The problem with film adaptations, like Rent the movie, is that when you're watching someone sing on the balcony, you're seeing them sing on the balcony. That's weird. You're not seeing them sing on the scaffolding that you've convinced yourself is the balcony, and now the singing is their internal monologue. You're not doing that like you do in the theater. You're watching a person singing off the balcony, which is weird. So yes, I think that unless done very well, films do have a hard time being proper adaptations of theater plays unless they realize what they're doing. You can't just be like, okay, we're going to make that exact same play, but with visuals. That it doesn't work. I think we haven't talked about this on the podcast, but I think that something that does it a little bit more successfully is the new In the Heights movie, because
I haven't seen that.
I know, but they do have things that are like big dance numbers and things like that, like the original show does, which feels a lot less weird than Rent the movie, which they don't have that. It's just humans singing and it's weird. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, I feel like this movie, once I got over the confusion of like, wait, what is happening in terms of which show is which, you keep popping back to him on the stage performing Tick, Tick, Boom. So for me, it kind of worked in that sense because they're saying, this is a play. We're acknowledging this is a play. And in his retelling of the story, it's almost like you're entering his mind and singing. And I thought it worked a lot better in this than in a lot of musicals that I've seen where I'm like, the suspension of disbelief is just not working here. You know, this one, it took a while to find its footing. It took a while for me to like be comfortable with this. But once I there, I was like, okay.
Yeah. So to follow up on two things you said there is that I also find that when you're watching a theater production of something, you are very far away from the people performing. Mm-hmm. So they have to act like they also have to like project their voice so far. So they really have to sing. But when you're doing that, they and incredible voices, right? But like it that ultimately just everybody's voice kind of just sounds the same when they're doing that at some point. Like there's hard, it's like they're all doing the same style of singing.
Well, they all have to be able to belt basically.
Yeah, they have to belt. Mm-hmm. Which if everybody's doing that, it's a little boring. Mm-hmm. But in a theater production, it isn't. Mm-hmm. And they have to act, they have to do so much with their faces. They have to act, like you said, to the back wall. But then it's hard to ask people to do that in a film because it is hard to act while you sing.
Yes.
So people are still acting to the back wall, but the camera's like right in their face.
Yeah, which makes it feel a bit phony.
Yes. So it's like this is entirely fake.
Mm-hmm. Like, okay, a good example of that. A scene that I liked, but wish I could have liked it more, was when the couple is having an argument and the music that's overlaying it is them on the stage singing a song about couples fighting, basically. Yeah. And that is like, it's supposed to be hammy. Oh my God, I'm so glad they put that on the stage and not in the film as like the narrative, because that would have made me so uncomfortable. But God, I wish the camera was not so close to their faces, because all of that would have been a lot funnier if it was a little bit further away. But when it's so close, it's actually just kind of uncomfortable.
Yes, it is. And like you, it took me a while to like settle into this film. I like actively hated the first 15 minutes. I was like considering turning it off because I was like, this is like the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. Mm. And like Andrew Garfield is doing so much with his face. Mm-hmm. It's like, dude, you don't need to move all of your facial muscles at the same time in all of these directions. Mm-hmm. Like, chill the fuck out.
But he mellowed out by the end, too.
Yeah, it felt like it changed for me, like, after the first 15 minutes. It, like, kind of settled into more than it was. And I was, like, the movie I wanted, I would have been, like, why don't you just shoot Andrew the stage play, but Andrew Garfield, right? Mm-hmm. Because him on stage was great.
Yep.
Like, that is so good. And his, like, one-man play with more than one man. And that's, like, so well done. And then, like, the parts where it's, like, not musical when it's actually just, like, dramatic acting in his life, that part was also really good.
Yep. I did find that the parts where it overlapped between the stage musical and his life, it actually balanced out way better in like the second, maybe two-thirds of the movie.
Yes, it did.
But I find that's the case with a lot of theater in general, like musicals in general, is the beginning is all like, we're telling you about their life. So here's a lot of songs that are happy, but kind of about nothing. Mm-hmm. And it was all, so in those scenes, they used a lot of music from Tick, Tick, Boom, but also a lot of music from the play that was never made. So I think it was their way of showing more music. And what's really interesting is with that music, you can actually hear a lot of the themes and the lyrics and very similar songs to what's in Rent, though the ones in Rent are better, especially like compared to those ones at the beginning. Like it's actually quite funny because there's a, what is that song? Bohemia?
Yeah.
There's a song in Rent called La Vie Boheme. It's the same song. Like, but the thing is, Bohemia, they didn't make that up for this movie. This was a song that Jonathan actually wrote, and it was for his original show, or maybe it was for Tick, Tick, Boom. I'm not sure. But there was a lot of songs like that. It's like some of the songs they're singing about Rent and stuff, and I'm like, it's funny.
Yeah, I mean, I like knowing that stuff. I like it, right? Because it's like, well, you could see like the evolution of an artist. Like he pulled from stuff. Like, obviously, everybody does this, but he pulled from stuff that never happened and updated it, and it turned out to be better. Mm-hmm. Like, through iteration, it got better.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I just wish there was more of that in this movie. I did like how they weren't afraid to show him. Like, he's not a good friend or a good partner. He, like, kind of sucks.
That's the thing. I always find it really interesting when these characters that are supposed to be the protagonist and they're like these creative geniuses, they're actually kind of neglectful assholes, you know?
Yeah, and I liked how the movie showed that, and it didn't really give a definitive opinion on it either way, mm-hmm. right? They were like, this is just how he was.
Yeah.
And it's up to you to decide. Like, you can totally see why they break up and why his friends get frustrated at him. And he is, like, when he is attentive to his friends and partner, mm-hmm. you, like, understand why people like him.
Well, because he actually does care. He just gets so the blinders and stuff. And, like, you know what? I did think that Andrew Garfield was really, really good at certain dramatic points where he's, like, completely losing it. And you're like, oh, God, this guy's not okay. But, like, believably not okay. Like, he hasn't slept. His power goes off, you know? Like,
yeah,
believably unhinged.
I really liked Andrew Garfield in when it's just dramatic and mm-hmm. when it's on the stage. I thought he was really bad when he was having to, like, Broadway for a movie scene stuff, for lack of a better term.
And weirdly enough, I felt those scenes fit the least into the film.
They did. They didn't fit. It felt like, okay, it's like Lin-Manuel Miranda was like, I want to do, obviously he loves musicals, no surprise, mm-hmm. but he's like, I want to do a big number in the middle of this film because it's like, it feels like it's missing. And I was like, but the film, in my opinion, the film didn't need it.
It didn't need it. I don't know why that was, if it was to, like, get in more songs or if it was to, like, have the typical structure of a musical, or if it was to shoehorn in all of the cameos. The amount of cameos in this movie is absurd.
It's insane.
Yeah. And, like, and the thing is, you and I aren't huge theater buffs, so there is way more that we missed. I looked up a list and it's crazy. Like, most of the people that are there for the workshop or whatever as just, like, critics or audience members are famous people, like very famous theater people, like writers or lyricists or whatever.
Yeah.
And that whole diner scene, pretty much every person you see is a theater star, is a musical star. There was, like, multiple people from Hamilton, though, I mean, Lin-Manuel Miranda has those guys on speed dial. But
of course he does. I'm surprised there was no Jonathan Groff.
Yeah. There was Bernadette Peters. Yes. There was someone else from In the Heights and Hamilton. He was in the audience at the end. There was the three bums, as they call them. Those three people were from the original cast of Rent.
Are you telling me this is the musical superhero film?
100%. This film is a love letter to musicals, and I genuinely think that anyone who loves musicals will love this. Enjoy it.
Yeah, I agree with that. If you love musicals, you'll love this film because mm-hmm. it's well directed, it's well staged. He obviously really cares about this story that mm-hmm. he's telling and feels like it's important.
Well, and I feel like anyone who really, really loves musicals will also feel the same way. Like, this is not just him being like, oh, there's this cool guy and we love him. I think everyone in the musical community thinks this guy is kind of a genius, you know? But I also feel like it's very telling of, like, dreams in New York City and in the arts and mm-hmm. stuff. Like, I did like that whole line of the story. And it's so interesting when the agent, like, he pours his whole heart out into this thing, then it doesn't go well. But, like, even if it does go well, the agent has a point. If you want this to be your career, you can't pour your whole life into one project and then be like, whew, I'm tired. That's it. I made my one, you know?
You got to just try again.
If it's a success, like, people, any artist, people who make film, people who make plays, like, it is so much work to do it. But then you have to do another one. Otherwise, it's not a career. You literally have to write hit after hit. And that's crazy to me.
It is. I do wish that the movie did a little more about that. I thought that was interesting. I was like, mm-hmm. ooh, there's some stuff we can mine there. And then the movie ends. And I'm like, well, okay.
I also thought there was more that they could have done on, like, the stuff that eventually led him to writing Rent.
Yes.
I'm aware that this was structured around Tick, Tick, Boom. And I think since he hadn't written Rent yet, and this the film structure, I think, was similar to the play of Tick, Tick, Boom, he's not sitting there being like, and I saw some HIV posters and I went, huh, friends in my life have da-da-da-da-da. But, like, I don't know, from the trailer even, it seems like all of that was more prevalent in his life before writing Rent. And it is, because they say write about what you know. But it did feel like a series of, like, Easter eggs and, like, alluding to what's going to happen without actually showing the direct influences.
I mean, his friend Michael is essentially that, in my opinion, is that that's what that character serves.
But that's a very small thing. You know what I mean? Like, this guy's in the theater community. People around him are dying, you know?
Yeah, and there are obviously lots of queer people in the theater community.
Well, and also, well, at the and this is something that's very well pointed out in Rent too. It's not just the queer people that are dying from it. There's a lot of like people sharing needles and drug use and stuff like that. Half the people that die in Rent are not queer.
Yes, and it's like substance abuse was a huge issue as well.
Yeah, especially in this community. But yeah, the thing is, for me, Michael's HIV didn't necessarily feel like Andrew Garfield's character, Jonathan, coming to the realization that HIV was horrible and it was killing all his friends. It more felt like him realizing that he had been a bad friend, you know?
Yeah, yeah. That,
like, in a different movie, it could have been cancer, you know?
Yes, I agree with that. Like, this friend was like, Michael was asking for Jonathan's help for so long and he was neglecting him.
Mm-hmm.
And then those scenes are real, which I think are well done. But it's gets to the point, it's like, then he has the scene where he's like playing the piano in the park. And I'm just like, Lin-Manuel Miranda, you're obviously like a very talented theater director and actor. And you're like now moving over into like more of the film world and both of those things. But as a director, fucking stop moving the camera if it doesn't need to be moved.
Yeah.
Like, if you're moving the camera in a movie, it's supposed to mean something.
Though I have to say, I kind of forgot this was his first time directing. And in terms of like a movie musical, I think he did pretty well with the popping back and forth between real life and the stage and how to incorporate the songs from the stage into real life. Like, pretty impressive for a first time director, especially like there's nothing to model this off of, right?
No, there isn't. But he does move the camera a lot.
Yeah, that he does.
And you know, he's gonna learn as he directs more movies, and he has been so successful in his other career that he basically gets to do what he wants now as a new director. So I assume his later movies will just get better and everything. But it's still like, I don't think this movie's gonna do anything in the Oscars, honestly, just because. Like, the only thing I could see it getting nominated for is maybe Andrew Garfield. Other than that, like, none of the songs are original, as far as I know.
I don't think they are. You're right, because I think they're all Jonathan. Maybe it'll be nominated for something that, like, kind of gives a nod to the fact that it's a musical. Like, they often get nominated for, like, sound editing or something.
Yeah, sound editing and mixing or something.
Yeah, because you're right. The music categories, it's best original song or best original score, and this movie has neither of those.
Yes, so it can't be. I assume it will clean up at the Grammys for like their other awards and stuff. But Andrew Garfield is great in 75% of this film, and then in 25% he is incredibly awful.
I honestly just think it just takes a while for this movie to even out.
It does. It starts and it's so in your face, and you're just like, oh my, this is like the musical, and I'm like, going into this, I really dislike musicals, so I was like starting and I was like, oh no, is this gonna be 2 hours of my life? I'm gonna be sitting here and I'm just gonna be like, I hate everything about all of this. And then it mellows out and becomes a movie, and I was like, oh
yeah,
okay,
and there
thank
were
God.
Scenes that I really liked, like I thought the what is it called, the focus group, I thought that was funny. I think it started to work well, it didn't start to work well for me, but I liked when it was like I don't know, after the workshop, and like, yeah, he's there's like the girls' duet. It's like his boo and then his like lead actor doing the duet. And then he has like the Michael HIV thing. And then when he's like running and it's like the, I don't know, the tick, tick, boom song. I don't know. There's like ticking and it's getting frantic. And I was like, this is all really working for me. Then there was the piano in the park and I was on my phone again suddenly. But there were certain parts that really worked for me.
Yes, I agree with that. There are parts that work for me as well. And then there are also other parts that didn't work.
So. Agreed. And I have to ask you, though, did this movie make you feel really old? Like, this movie is obsessed with being 30.
Wow, just putting me on blast, huh?
Well, but I felt old and I'm not 30.
As somebody who is 30, I don't know. Like, part of me was like, yeah, I understand where like he's coming from. It's like he put that arbitrary goal of being like he wanted to be like Stephen Sondheim.
Well, that's the thing.
So I think it's more self-inflicted because other people are like, 30's not that old for this industry, my guy.
But the thing is, in the 80s, which is when this mostly takes place,
Well, people only lived to the 50s if they were 30 in the 80s.
Well, no, it's more that like all of his friends around him are dying at before 30 because of AIDS and HIV. Yes. So I guess it would make you feel kind of old, or his friends have big careers or whatever. So I think it's partly that. Yeah, I don't know. Well, and also we have a friend who used to say that 30 is gay death. If you don't have a partner and are settled down and know your life, by the time you're 30, like that's it for you. And he is in the theater community. He's hanging out with a lot of friends who are gay. And that sort of thing. So yeah, it's interesting.
I don't know. It didn't really make me feel old, because I think what this takes place in the 86, 87,
mm-hmm. something like
around
that.
Around there. And it's like where we are now is that even people who are older than us, like, our entire generation of people are just, all of us are kind of stuck at the same point that we have been for so long. Mm-hmm. And we're all just aging at, like, we're aging, but it's like nobody's really progressing.
Doing
it's
anything.
Like, I don't feel like I don't really feel like I'm a 30-year-old if I, like, from the 80s. I feel like it just is what it is now.
I mean, to be fair, he also died when he was 35. So 30 is old for him.
He did. And he died from a massive aorta dysplasia or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was unnoticed and misdiagnosed in him. And they mention it. That's mentioned briefly at the end of the film.
Yeah, because he dies the night before opening night of Rent.
Of Rent. You know, he just knew his movie. He has, like, that is like main character syndrome right there. Like, he is a protagonist on Earth. Like, that only happens to people with that.
Yeah, it's like, that's made up. Like,
yeah, like, this guy's life has so much happening to it. And I'm just like, I'm living in your world. Mm-hmm. You're the main character and I'm just here. Like, I'm not, none of this stuff happens to me. Mm-hmm. But no, I ultimately think, like Carolyn said, if you love musicals, you'll love this movie.
Yep.
If you are like me and are kind of ambivalent about that or don't like it, there'll be parts of this movie you dislike, but ultimately I still think it's worth watching because of the dramatic part and the stage part.
Yeah.
For it. And it's, other than the first, for me, it was like 15 to 20 minutes. Other than that, the movie is engaging.
That's the thing. I think this movie, other than the first little bit, is good for even people who don't really like musical theater, which is an impressive feat for a musical, because there's a lot of musical haters.
As one of them who proudly says a musical is a bad way to tell a story, and I still stand by that.
I would have preferred this just like spoken.
Yeah, I would have. I enjoyed it, and I will always check out what Lin-Manuel Miranda directs, even though I think in real life I would hate him.
Mm-hmm.
Because I also hate theater kids. They're the worst.
Mm-hmm.
Please stop is with them. It's, just theater kids, please stop. That's all I'm asking you. You're too much. Sometimes you're too much.
I mean, it's true.
And Carolyn is a theater kid, and I
am not a theater kid. I'm not a musical kid. That's a whole other breed.
I mean, you don't even like music, okay?
I mean, I like it.
No, not really. You're a person who likes silence.
It's not true, actually. Can you hear the chorus of the dog in the background? I can't stand
the dog screams. He's just so excited about Tick, Tick, Boom. He's like, I can't believe I heard somebody else watching it.
Yeah, I think he's singing along at this point.
Yeah, like, this is 1,000% a film that you could have on. And as Carolyn and I have said before, it's a movie you can do other stuff through.
Yeah.
And yeah. I don't think it makes the movie worse. I think it actually might make it better in some bits.
Mm-hmm. Once you have settled into understanding what it is, because I know at the beginning I was a bit confused with the stage stuff, like, which part is the stage? Like,
yes.
Clearly he's telling a story, but like, what is that story? That story is Tick, Tick, Boom. That story is he's telling his life and you're also watching his life. Once your brain wraps itself around that, then you can kind of move about.
Yeah. It's also kind of a love letter to New York. I did dislike the shaming of a mildly dirty apartment. Is that his partner comes in and they're looking around and he has like dirty sinks and some beer bottles and they're like, I can't believe you're living like this. And I'm like, fuck, that's not dirty. I was just like, that's, I mean, that just kind of seems like somebody who lives alone sometimes and maybe has been putting off cleaning for like 2 days.
Well, I mean, she also made a comment later that was like, oh, da da da, however many years from now, you're still going to be living in this apartment. I'm like, what's wrong with his apartment? He lives alone. Good for him.
Yeah. Well, also, that apartment seems really nice for New York. It has
four
rooms.
I hope a couple years from now, I still live in this apartment, you know?
Yeah. I was like, why are you shaming this man how he lives? Let him live his life.
It's like, isn't that the point? To get an apartment and live there for a couple years? Like,
yeah. And it's like, if she was like, you can't live here, you can't keep living like this because you can't afford to live here, that's different.
Yeah.
But she's just like, you can't keep living like this. And I'm like, mm-hmm. What? So Lin-Manuel Miranda is a classist. He doesn't understand how us proletariats live.
I know, right?
But other than this movie's, it's totally fine. It's kind of, you know, it will definitely be at the Oscars because this seems like Academy bait, mm-hmm. personally.
Well, and also the theater and film communities are pretty tied together, so I think people will appreciate it. I mean, it's no love letter to the movies, like what was that movie?
Oh, I mean, I'm sure there will be ones we have to watch coming up, I assume.
No, oh, what was that one that was like about a writer? This is big.
The one about a writer
at the Academy Awards last year.
Last year?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were talking about this year. I was like, watched a movie about a writer?
And the man with the mustache is in. This is horrible. Never mind.
Man with a mustache, huh?
I want to call it
talking
Capote,
about Sound of Metal, a
bad.
Love letter to the movie.
I want
to
call it Capote, and then I want to call it Capone. Neither of which it is.
The Father?
No. The one that's a love letter to the movie is. It's about a guy writing a really famous
Mank.
Movie.
Mank. It's Mank. It's one word.
This is why you don't name your movies with one word, because they're not memorable. Yes,
the
Mank.
Guy with the mustache, Mank.
It's no Mank. It's no Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. It's not a love letter to the movies. It's a love letter to theater. Which
theater kids are everywhere.
They are, and a lot of them transition into film, especially these days. So maybe people, you know, it's like their cousins. Maybe they'll give a little shout out, a nod.
Oh, I hope not. You can find me at James Willicks, except on Twitter, where the O is a zero. And you can find Carolyn
at CarolynDunk93 on all the platforms.
And you can send us an email at letswatchpod@gmail.com. And we're available on all the places. And the next movies we are watching, two more. Surprise, surprise.
I know. It's almost like we do this all the time.
We hurtled towards the end of 2021, a year that definitely happened. It didn't feel like it didn't. Let me find the list again. What
Bruised.
Page is it on?
We're watching Bruised.
And Candyman. Bruised is Candyman. The Halle Berry directorial debut on Netflix, and Candyman is Candyman.
I'm hoping for some bees and some abs, and I hope that they're in the movies that I think they are and not the other way around. Though,
well, you're about to be surprised, aren't you?
You know what? Halle Berry with some bees in her mouth? I'm into it.
Halle Berry with some bees in her mouth, then an MMA fight, and then Candyman is just abs.
He's jacked, yeah.
It's just like, oh my god, Candyman got
fucking jacked
small.
In the original one. He's like running around in a coat with no shirt.
He is. I think that Tony Todd has aged a bit. I don't think he is as jacked as he once was, considering this movie's like 30 years later, and it would be impressive if he was.
Mm-hmm.
But Yahya Abdul-Mateen's in it, and he is jacked. So you'll definitely get abs in both films, I assume.
All right, so abs and abs. No
abs and
abs.
Abs.
Mm-hmm.
No.